Sports, wine, life. This is the Macko and Cos podcast.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to a Friday edition of the Macko and Cos podcast. Because Bob was deathly ill on Thursday, and so we had to move it back one day. Good morning, Bob, or good afternoon. How you doing, buddy?
Good, buddy. I didn't come yesterday because it was about 2 hours. It was T-minus 2 hours till we were going to do the pod.
Yeah.
And I started to feel nauseous, and I thought, I've heard so much about this flu.
Yeah.
Do I really want to go to Matt's place and start barfing everywhere? I thought,
And then
I went right to sleep, to tell you the truth. I slept a day away yesterday. I haven't done something like that since I was in university, where you wake up and go, I got nowhere to be. I was going to sleep.
Where was Charlotte?
She was at school.
Oh, okay. So you just, good. Well, then maybe you needed the sleep.
Maybe I did. Like Marco Estrada.
Yeah.
I thought that was an interesting story. Did you see that this week?
The Marco Estrada one is a very interesting story where he admitted that leading up to the trade deadline, or the MLB, the trade deadline, he couldn't sleep, filled with anxiety, and his ERA and his performance plummeted. And the day after the trade deadline, he pitched great and looked great again, and he admitted lack of sleep hurt him. And you know what's one thing he mentioned in that whole article was that one thing that helped him? A psychiatrist.
There was so much baked into that article that sports almost never talks about. One is, and this is kind of changing, but one is the importance of rest and how sleep actually has a negative effect on performance.
Yeah.
We don't really talk about that so much. I think we don't talk about it much in our culture because it's not built around sleep. We are not a mindful culture when it comes to rest.
No, because rest is for the weak. I'm going to sleep when I sleep.
When I'm dead.
Sleep when you're dead. There was, last year, there was a couple different naval accidents with boats hitting other ships, and it led to like a lot of deaths. Like I think last year there were 17 American members of the Navy that died, and in a bunch of those cases it was human error. And why? Someone fell asleep and they didn't see the other ships. And you find out that on the Navy, guys will go 2 days without sleeping. Guys will average less than 4 hours sleep for weeks on end.
I've never understood emergency room doctors, how they can go on shifts for 12, 24, sometimes pushing 36 hours. And they'll lie on a cot for a couple hours because they can get a couple hours of shut-eye. But I don't see what good that does. It just strikes me as the craziest reality. You're opening people up with knives.
Yeah.
You should be rested.
Yeah. Well, a lot of that is actually the same thing with the Navy. You know what it's a result of? There's not enough.
Right.
Not enough doctors, not enough guys in the Navy. So then everyone's got to pick up the slack.
And that's why I think as a culture, as I mentioned, I don't want to sound like Bernie Sanders here, but we are built around productivity.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the short-sightedness of it. And it kind of, this riles up the socialist in me.
Yeah.
I get mad because it makes me feel like we're all disposable, because people will be like, well, we'll just drive you until you're not useful anymore. And then we'll just get rid of you and replace you with somebody new. But I think we all know in our lives that if you pace yourselves and do things methodically, you almost always get through it better than if you just plow your head down and go like crazy. I mean, everybody can do that for a short period of time.
But
it's just not a way to live.
It's not a way to live. But when you start up, think about when you are doing pitches. Think about when you're doing the big projects with people. There's sometimes you're not getting 8 hours sleep or 7 hours sleep. It's part of the sacrifice. It stinks, but that's just kind of part of the deal.
Yeah, it's weird. I always have a tough one because you're kind of right with that, too. There are times you have to be all in.
Yeah.
And
you've got a friend named George Straubopoulos. Does he get 8 hours sleep a night?
He gets 8 hours sleep a week.
There you go.
Is that the same?
Old Jewish proverb, Bob. If you want your dreams to come true, don't sleep.
Yeah, that's a great
line. And the problem is that mindset does lead to a lot of negative things, like Marco Estrada.
It's a weird conundrum that we find ourselves in. That's why I found that Marco Estrada story. And I've lived through this, too. I could relate to it on a personal
level. Oh, yes.
You've seen me walk into work on 2 hours sleep, and I look like I just got hit by a bus.
Yeah, and you've got the same machinery that makes you look like Bane from Batman as you're trying to sleep at night with the sleep apnea. Which, by the way, that must be fantastic for your wife. She turns over, and there's Darth Vader.
She didn't leave me, so I guess it's okay. But it's funny. One of the first things I was worried about when I saw how that thing fit was, oh, my God, how am I going to be in, like, I can't be in bed next to my wife wearing this thing.
Yeah, imagine trying to be amorous. Oh, Oh, you're in the mood?
Not
hold
possible.
On.
Let me unfasten this. The clasp on the back of my head.
Off. Yep.
It is either super, super kinky.
Yeah.
Or not at all.
There's no middle
There's
ground.
There's no middle ground there. You're either the gimp or you're just lying on your side.
And you know what? I don't know if I'd want to be married to someone that looks at all that sleep apnea machine hooked up to you and go, yep, that's turning me on.
Exactly.
I don't know what's Maddie. Going on, Tiger, but let's get loose.
You know, call me a little bit middle of the road. Call me coffee mate, but you know, yeah.
I don't know how to transition. Actually, it's very easy. A lot of things to get to. Top five NHL All-Star Game acts that we'd like to see. I don't have as much emotion against Kid Rock. In fact, I can defend Kid Rock. But I've got a great list of far, far, far better things for the NHL All-Star Game than a guy who feels a little bit irrelevant, but maybe that's my cocoon. I'm not really in the music scene.
Take a look at the two leagues right now that have their All-Star Games coming up.
Yep.
The NBA, where everyone's jazzed to see, okay, what teams will LeBron and Steph Curry pick.
Mm-hmm.
And here in Toronto, we're all proud of DeMar DeRozan. Congratulations to him being elected as a starter, voted in as a starter. And then you've got the NHL, which has zero charisma around it, and everyone's just mad about the halftime intermission.
Hockey Twitter
picked.
Could not be more angry. Oh,
pretty mad.
Pretty, pretty mad.
In general, I don't care much about who gets picked for the... Well, I guess we can get into this later. We'll get to this
Big
later.
Big question is it time to criticize Mike Babcock for the Leafs offense?
All right, so
why don't we just start? Let's start with
why don't we just start there? Because all of our takeaways, whether it's from the St. Louis game or the Philadelphia games, probably half our takeaways
Columbus
are going
to game Ottawa game.
Keep going.
How about the last nine games?
Yeah, since really about the beginning of December. Yeah. Okay, so let's just dive in. The big question is kind of the question in Toronto sports right now: how culpable is Mike Babcock for the power shortage the Leafs are facing?
I'm going to go 80%.
Really?
And I might be going low. I've been thinking about this one a lot, Bob. Been thinking about this one a lot. Before the Leafs, what was the loss before Philadelphia?
It was St. Louis this week. Early.
St. Louis on Tuesday. Before the game, they're interviewing Kadri. What do you got to do tonight? Got to play fast, quick, fast, speed. These are the words he was using. And they didn't. In the second period, what do I listen to? I hear Bob McKenzie. Leafs aren't adjusting. They're just playing on the boards. They're playing on the sides. They're not adjusting. I read James Myrtle. What does he say? Team looks scared. The team looks frightened to make a play. I see three goals, shutout, three goals. By the way, two of those three goals, shootout losses. Two goals, three goals, one goal, two goals last night. Brandon Pridham is loving this. No one else, the salary cap expert. I look at all of this, and I can't help but go, yep. There's more the players can do, but this feels like Babcock saying, we're going to play the game the right way, and maybe it'll work down the road, but right now it stinks.
So I'm of two minds on this, but since you're pretty hard into Babcock needs to be, if not blamed entirely, at least he's pretty responsible in your mind, right?
Yeah.
Directly responsible. So let's just follow that up. They're not opportunistic. That's what you're saying. They're not playing with speed. Remember the blue wave? We saw it again last night where they scored two quick ones. But do you remember at the beginning of the year, you and I, well, you came up with the nickname.
Blue wave.
We would have cheers on the pod about how exciting and electrifying the offense was.
40 goals, first nine games.
The blue wave was how they would score in rapid succession.
Yes.
It was like being tsunamied by their offense. And you're just not seeing it right now. It's funny because I was thinking about this. Everybody anticipates in the same way, and everybody reacts differently. And what we see in great skill players isn't necessarily how they anticipate, because even the okay players are taught to how to anticipate. That's systems play. Okay, this happens. Here's how you react. Put yourself in position. It's all kind of automatic. Everybody does it in the same way. What was really cool about the Leafs in the beginning of the season was, how do you react to something that you didn't expect? Like, what's your personal take on this in a weird way? You know, we'd be singing the praises of Marner's edge work because he was such a creative skater.
Yeah.
Or, you know, talking about East-West play as opposed to just chip it out and try to not get in trouble. So I think in some ways we're not only mad about the losing, but the fact that an exciting team has been turned into pablum.
And that's...
It's all about anticipation
yeah.
as opposed to reaction, and reaction is where the fun is.
And you know what? That's a lot of it. I'm going to tell you right now, Bob, I am actually very emotional about this topic. So my 80% to Babcock, probably not fair. And I'll explain in a second. But here's one other thing that raged me. before that St. Louis, during that St. Louis game, which was just a piece of dung of a hockey game.
First game in a long time I actually haven't watched all the way through just because I just didn't care anymore.
Yeah.
It was so boring.
I was doing morning show. I figured I should watch it. Ugh. You know what Ray Ferraro said during that game? He said, this is going to be a working man's game. This is a working game. And I'm thinking to myself, bleep you, not to Ray Ferraro. The Leafs are not a working man's team. There is too much talent on this Leafs squad where it's, we got to grit our way through this game. And I know you need that from time to time. And I know you need that from the playoffs time to time. But with all that talent, and that's what's getting reduced to, I heard that. And I rewound that clip so many times so I could transcribe exactly what Ferraro said. And it made me angry on a micro level with the Leafs, but it also made me angry on a macro level with the NHL.
So we could even take that into two stages. With Babcock, because he was part of the big smart push on behalf of management,
yep.
Kyle Dubas and Mark Hunter, they were just doing all these smart things.
Yes.
That we assumed that Mike Babcock, you know, being a very successful coach, obviously, was part of the smart new way of conceptualizing hockey.
And he is a great coach.
He is a great coach, and he's won, and he's done a lot of good things. But maybe we overestimated exactly just how progressive Mike Babcock is. He is making all the same kinds of decisions that coaches always make. Randy, I like size. Yes. I like safe. I like veterans. Don't make mistakes.
Matt Martin playing every game but one. Polak back and playing a lot. Komarov more minutes than younger skilled guys. And here's an analogy I made about Babcock. Maybe, and everyone was saying this to me. A lot of smart hockey people are saying, no. He's just coaching the kids differently this year versus last year because he's instilling in them lessons for the playoffs and for years and years to come. He's Mr. Miyagi, paint the fence, Danielson, before I teach you how to do a crane kick. And I get that. Okay, so the Leafs right now are both organized religion and a fax machine. They both require a leap of faith to think that it works. And so I'm like, okay, maybe all these games where all the youth and talent is being repressed, I guess it's for a bigger picture. I need to see that bigger picture.
So it's a great line, by the way. Fax machines and organized religion.
When you send a fax, are you really sure? Is it side up? Is it side down? Did it make it there? Like, I always call someone, did my fax make it? The machine said it was complete, and I got the little sheet of paper afterwards that said successful transmission, but I'm not sure.
You did some guest booking at Off the Record.
Yes.
Back in the day, and that's how I started on the show, as I was a guest booker, so that I lived and died by who was on the panel.
Yeah.
And considering who I actually booked, probably should have died, but that's another story. But we would hang on to those slips, those verification slips that the fax went through.
Oh, yeah.
Because if there was ever any problem, you at least want to say, look, I got this. Here's my get out of jail free card. I did send that fax and it did get through. Yes, absolutely. A leap of faith. Here's the thing. We know that Babcock has a ton of sway inside of the organization. Maybe even more than the GMs at times. We'll never really know. But we feel like you look at that team, like look at Dominic Moore. He didn't really get much of a chance to start the year. They were bouncing him and Eric Fair. Then, you know, what's it been, 7 games since he played?
Yeah.
Not that he's the be-all and end-all, but he was the guy who was brought in to be the savior of the fourth line. He was the Brian Boyle replacement. You can kind of tell that, in my opinion, Babcock never really bought into that. He was looking for a better solution. Freddie Gauthier probably isn't that either. You know, you mentioned Matt Martin. You see Leo Komarov getting all these minutes. These are the examples of Babcock playing favorites. All coaches do.
Yep, all coaches do in all sports. And it should be said, by the way, the overtime winner last night, much like the overtime winner, I believe, against Columbus, both times, individual lack of effort by Nylander and mistake by him cost the Leafs. So this is not just on Babcock. And I go a little heavy on him than I should.
Not necessarily, though. Not necessarily.
But you know where it comes
from? Well, let's go heavy, and then we can dial back.
Okay.
There are a lot of points that I think are valid in terms of criticizing his strategy right now. The idea of playing safe. Are we convinced that in the modern NHL that is the right way to play hockey? Are we convinced that is how you win in the playoffs? Because it seems to me like when Kadri was saying speed, quick to the puck, make quick decisions, that sounds more and more like the winners in the NHL than it does, okay, slow it down, plotting, play big, play heavy, play safe. I get it. It's really hard to win in the playoffs 6-5 every night.
And good defense will lead to good offense. Is
but the good defense isn't leading to good offense.
Not right now.
Because they're not, like, the breakouts are an issue. I'm not convinced if this is the let's show the guys how to play a grind-it-out kind of game, that necessarily is the way you win in the playoffs. There has to be an element of that. It's almost like you're a bartender. You're a mixologist. You got to find the perfect mix between, okay, I know how to be responsible, but you don't want to choke off opportunity. And the weird thing is, how many times do we used to say this about Dwayne Casey when he would be playing his, you know, his basketball? We criticize his scheme.
Yeah, from years back.
Yeah. Are you coaching the talent of the organization, or are you coaching your way of doing things?
Yeah.
Like, that's a bit of a thing with Babcock here, right? Like, is he coaching this team or the team he wants them to be?
If you listen to a lot of, like, just, you know, your hockey insiders or experts, they will say, no. Even young guys like Andy Kyoto, former goaltender, you know, he's like, no, this is part of the process. And Dave Poulin said, this is the pain. You know, the pain used to be losing all the games. This is a different version of the pain, which is you see these shiny, fast, athletic players, and the coach ain't letting them go nuts out there. And that's another form of pain because aesthetically, it's an absolute disaster.
Do you ever wonder how hard Babcock would be to play for if you're a talented young guy in this league?
Oh, God. I would love to ask Austin Matthews. Hey, Austin, you know, eventually you're going to need a contract. You're playing 17 and a half. There's 60 other forwards that play more minutes than you do. Wow, look at you. You're still number one on even strength goals. Imagine if you played
three more minutes a night.
Yeah. There's about 20 forwards in the NHL that play 20 minutes or more. And Connor McDavid, who plays 40. And it just seems, you know, if I'm Matthews, I wonder if he is upset by all this.
Nylander, Marner, their minutes are starting to tick back up. And Babcock fancies himself a master psychologist. And maybe he is one. Although in Detroit, I don't know how much that psychology really worked, because by the time he left, I don't think the players were crying. And you had guys like Nick Lidstrom retire, and some have suggested perhaps retire early because he just didn't want to play for Mike Babcock anymore.
Yeah.
And he had done all he needed to do. Look at the free agent market for Detroit. Back in the day when they were that model franchise, you know, you get Brett Hull and Luke Robitaille. And over the last few years, who the hell wants to go to Detroit?
Yeah.
And you wonder how much of that is players talking, saying, you know, Babcock's really hard to play for. And that's how you wind up getting Steven Weiss. And that's how you wind up getting Brad Richards on his last legs.
Weiss.
You know?
Remember Steven Weiss? Like, oh, this guy's going to really be the chip that turns the team around.
Well, but they've been in on everybody. Have you heard a discussion, you know, Stamkos, oh, they're going to go and get him. A few years ago, Rick Nash, oh, the Detroit. They haven't been able to get anybody to buy into going to Detroit. And I wonder how much of that is players talking about how Babcock is a bit of a control freak. And you don't necessarily... You're not necessarily allowed to express yourself in the same way you might with another coach.
Yeah, and
I don't know. That's all conjecture.
Of course, and the funny thing is it's always weird being critical. There's this push and pull. There's weird about being critical of a coach who is an incredibly successful person versus us, the palookas. On the other level, it's the job of the media to be able, you know, to look at situations, look at facts and everything, and go and to be critical.
Okay, so let's be specific here, Matt.
Yeah.
Because if we're going to say yes, and your point was 80% to 100, this is Babcock's fault.
Yeah.
What are the principal things that he's doing or not doing that are contributing to the Leafs slide right now offensively?
Just personnel. You look at, again, the older veterans on the ice. That's, you know, that's the first thing. The fact that the team looks scared, you know, and is hesitant. That starts from the coach. Those would be the specific things for me when I look at Mike Babcock.
You know, so I'm going to sort of flip the script now a little
bit. Sure, sure, go.
I do think that some of this is unquestionably true, that he's responsible for the Leafs not scoring. But some of it, I'm not sure, is really his fault or necessarily a bad idea. We talked about minutes and who gets minutes, and maybe Austin Matthews should get more minutes and the kids should get more minutes, but... a lot of smart people have suggested this could be him listening to his sports science department.
Oh, yeah.
And he may just, you know, be keeping guys safe from injury because he anticipates a playoff run, mm-hmm. and he doesn't want to torch them. And if Greg Popovich did exactly the same thing, we would say that guy's a genius.
Yes. Oh, yeah, yeah. And we've praised him for that. It's just the disparity is so great that it still opens your eyes.
Yeah, maybe. But also, this is the thing that I really come back to time and time again. We were told as Leafs enthusiasts before Babcock came in, there was going to be a reckoning mm-hmm. and there was going to be pain.
Yeah.
It'd be 5, 6, 7 years of pain until the Leafs were really a meaningful champion contender every single year. So maybe because last year was so much fun, we got ahead of ourselves.
Yep.
And that, you know, the trust the process, we stopped trusting the process and we believed everyone who said, you know, they can compete now. And maybe they could. But there are plenty of Leafs teams that could have competed in the now, and then they went for it and started making free agent deals and started getting rid of draft picks and started, you know, and they did all the things you do when you think, okay, let's seize this door that's just opened a crack. And maybe Babcock behind the bench is looking at this and saying, no, I got a bunch of talented young players. I got a mismatched roster, and I'm going to exercise control over this thing because it's not this year, but maybe it's the next year or the year after that when we can actually win a cup and walk in as favorites, as opposed to if everything breaks our way and we bust our balls to get there, it might happen for us.
And what you're talking about, I mentioned what Dave Poulin said the other day. This could be the different version of pain. The first version was, we're going to lose every night. This version is, well, no, we're a good team, but they've got to, all this talent has got to go through the Miyagi, paint the fence. I'm not going to teach you how to do the proper crane kick. Right now, you got to paint all those fences and wax those cars.
Nazem Kadri for years was considered undisciplined, offensively gifted, but and very imaginative, but he would be defensively a liability. Maybe he needs to be a wing instead of a center. And over time, they just eventually brought him to the point where last year he was in front of a line that was your stopper line.
Yep.
And he was still scoring.
And now he's got 1 point in his last, like, 19
games. He's weird and streaky, because before that he had something like 10 points in 12. Like, he's weird and streaky.
This is a hell of a streak when you're almost at 25% of the
season. It is. And this is where you get to I don't get Komarov thing. Because, you know, he's out there with Marlowe. And Marlowe's not an 80-point guy. Marlowe is, what, a 45-point guy?
Yeah.
40-point guy? Yeah. In best-case scenario? Best-case scenario, 50. But anyway, my point is, Marlowe is a good offensive player at this stage in his life. And Komarov is a very bad one.
Yes.
At this stage in his career.
Yes.
And he's sandwiched in between those two.
Yeah.
Bit of that and a bit of bad luck. All I would say is this could be crazy like a fox with him.
It could be. That's the leap of faith. That is the Babcock leap of faith right now that I've been hearing about. My final thought on this before we move on.
Oh, we're not moving on. I got a whole bunch of other stuff to go through.
Oh, about the Leafs?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because I want to defend them some more.
All right.
So defend them some more.
Go.
All right. So defending Babcock, one is, if we're serious about the process, maybe we accept this as part of the process. And he doesn't want to win this year. Not to the exclusion of development.
Yes.
Of player development. Also, the worst players are the worst players. Like, people say, oh, he's playing the veterans too much. And maybe that's true. But the roster's not that good. It's got some really dynamic high-end talent, but it's not good all the way through. The fourth line stinks. We know the defense is an issue. Yes, you can quibble and say Komarov shouldn't be playing this much. Maybe Connor Brown should be playing up there.
Yes, he should. Scored again last night.
100%. And is that a fair point? Sure. But you've got, like, are you just starting to sub in all the young Marlies at this point and make the team really, really young? Because, you know, there is something to be said about having vets out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's funny because leadership is a weird thing in the NHL because you send old guys out there who know what to do. It's just they're too slow now to actually do it properly. So from the bench, guys are watching old timers. They're not making mistakes, but they're not making plays either. It's like they're playing hockey the right way, but too slow.
Is it like being... can I do a horrible analogy that I already
please
regret?
Please do. Please do.
Are some of these older vets... is Komarov... Oh, this is a horrible analogy.
Go for it. You're already there.
Is he like a eunuch who knows where the G-spot is?
It's the worst analogy.
It's like, I know exactly how to please the woman, except I'm permanently impotent.
So like if Varys from Game of Thrones taught a sex class.
Yeah. It's like, you know, it's like the older guys, They know what to do, but they're just a little too slow.
The bald barber theory.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So that's sort of mine.
Okay. Well, that's pretty bad, really.
Ain't nothing but a G thing.
Look, when Zaitsev gets back, that's not going to be the answer. Gardner's not having his best year. I think Hainsey and Riley have been really terrific. But let's not kid ourselves who this roster is. When the shooting percentage is high and they're flying and it's dynamic, they can look good. But I think sometimes we get ahead of ourselves. They've still got work to do to make this the kind of team that can go against a St. Louis in a 7-game series
and
win.
That is fair. Of course, they lost to St. Louis, and St. Louis didn't have Jaden Schwartz and had their backup goaltender, and they still lost that game.
It's good performance by the backup goaltender.
Yes,
he did play well.
But St. Louis was also coming off 3 losses where they'd given up 17 goals. Anyway, moving on. And you're right about maybe we got ahead of ourselves. Absolutely.
And the Matthews factor.
It's a very legitimate point.
Maybe because there was so much excitement about the 3 kids last year that we didn't really understand how important Matthews was to that. That he's so far ahead of both Nylander and Marner in terms of driving the bus. He's been hurt a lot this year.
Mm-hmm.
When he's healthy, he plays great. When he's not so healthy, he doesn't look so good.
Yep.
And even his not so good is still very good.
Yes.
But it's not the kind of very good that can push a team from the loss to the win category night after night.
All right. All fair.
So, you know, when we talk about the offensive output being diminished.
Which it has been.
It unquestionably. And they just don't look right. I think they probably are. I think it's an Ing Babcock we trust situation. He's putting the restrictor plates on the kids, and we'll see where we're at in 2 years. But can I end off with this? I mean, you can wrap it up.
Yep.
Did I not say a few weeks ago, you're going to start to hear the Carlisle-Babcock comparisons coming soon?
And they're here.
Yeah, thank you very much.
They are here.
Thank you, thank
Absolutely.
You.
Absolutely. Carlisle would have had Matt Martin out there, probably even more.
He would have partnered with Fraser McLaren.
Yeah, oh yeah. Okay, so here's my final thought. Part of the reason why I've raged towards Mike Babcock is actually nothing to do with Mike Babcock. It has to do with the bigger picture of the NHL. I hate the fact that when you look at the Leafs' start to the year, they were 7-2, and they'd scored 40 goals. And by the way, they shut out Washington 2-0. They beat Chicago before Chicago's injuries. Blackhawks start out 2-0, fully healthy. They beat the Blackhawks. They open up beating Winnipeg, one of the best teams in the West. They had such a great start. And what does everyone tell you? Oh, that can't last. And also, no. That style doesn't work in the playoffs. I hate the fact that this offense, skill, we're going to outskill you, wave of offense, that approach is a wonderful novelty in October, but we all scoff at the idea that it can't work in the playoffs, because in the playoffs, it's just the nature of the game and nature of the coaches and nature of what you can do to shut down an offense. I hate that that's a reality.
I agree with you. I think hockey is a beautiful game and the NHL can be a boring league. But if you had millions of dollars to invest in something, would you invest in something that has worked in the past? Or something that might work in the future.
No. This is the blue chip stock versus what sort of cryptocurrency marijuana stock am
I going to
get?
So that's exactly a Bitcoin made of weed.
Exactly.
That's the offense we want. Bitcoin made of weed.
It's like the NBA, the shift has been more offense. The NFL,
stodgy old NFL,
is still about shift to offense. And hockey, it's still, don't worry, come the playoffs. You know those goals those guys scored? Yeah, you won't be seeing them no more. You know, you'll see them from flashes, but it won't be the same.
I also add this. We've talked a bit about this before, but one of the reasons why a game feels boring when it's a nothing-nothing game, I think part of it is also because the goalies aren't interesting anymore. When we were growing up, a goalie standing on his head would be wild and acrobatic. Dominic Hasek spilling all over the crease. Martin Brodeur stacked the pads. You know, it felt like, as I've said to you, like a goalie on the ice looked like the way an 8-year-old would draw a goalie playing net.
Yeah.
Now you would just have to draw someone being big and standing there and cutting down angles.
Yeah, like the goalies of today look like a bouncer at a nightclub. The goalies of yesteryear was something out of Cirque du Soleil.
You know what it was before? Do you remember in The Simpsons, there's that episode when there was the Yakuza? mm-hmm. and they get into the big fight with the mafia, and yes. there was the little guy, and you just know the little guy is going to do something good.
Oh, Marge. Yeah, exactly. I want to see what the little guy's going to do.
Right. That was the goalie back then. You just knew he was going to do something good.
Here's the thing. The Leafs, and I promise we're going to move on from the Leafs, the best version of them shouldn't be where Frederik Andersen's the first star.
That's a really true and good point. And my apologies to Freddie Andersen, because it doesn't look like this is going away, and I didn't think he'd be this good a goalie. But mm-hmm. I think over the last 20 games, he has the top save percentage in the NHL.
He's been unbelievable.
I think I heard that somewhere. I mean, he really should be an all-star. It's kind of silly that he's not.
Yeah, when the Penguins and the Blackhawks have been winning their cups and, you know, going through their runs, you don't talk about the goaltender first.
Well, and Freddie Andersen called out the team yesterday. It's good. A bit of a James Reimer thing where the goalie finally says, oh, what's with the effort going on up there?
Yeah.
I look, it's an interest. I wonder to what extent this is turning into a battle of egos behind the scenes, where you've got the coach that's trying to force the young team to play, quote unquote, the right way, and these dynamic young players who are saying, you know, I got contracts coming up.
How do you think the agents... How do you think the agents for Marner, Nylander, and Matthews are feeling?
You mentioned Brandon Pridham must be happy, right?
Brandon Pridham, every night, he looks to his left. He looks to his right. When no one's looking, he gives a little Tiger Woods fist bump after draining a 30-foot putt. He's like, yes, we got two goals. This is going to help us when it comes to our cap.
And we haven't even gotten into what do they do at JVR.
Yeah, well, another day.
Okay, so what's the final verdict? Because this was the big question. I'm going to say that Babcock is directly responsible for the offensive diminishment of the mm-hmm. team, but I think most of that is part of his plan. Right or wrong, I think he's meaning to do it.
Yep, so all eyes in the end point to Babcock, and now it's a leap of faith for the rest of us.
All right.
Question for you.
This is bud.
Is it amuse-bouche? What's it called when you have the little...
An amuse-bouche, like a little bite of something that's delicious. And
in between meals.
To have one little spoon of it.
It's like orange sherbet in between meals to sort of cleanse the palate.
Kind of like our old show used to be on the body of the TSN broadcasting day.
Morning show, Leafs lunch, Macko and Cause.
Amuse-bouche.
With amuse-bouche. Chocolate chip pancakes.
Yes.
Are they more candy or are they more breakfast food?
I'm going to go they're more cake. They're like a flattened cake.
Okay, so that's more candy. That's more on the candy side.
Yeah, I'd say they're more candy.
Sweet treat versus breakfast.
Sweet treat. And also true of muffins that are largely chocolate or whatever. Like if you have hazelnuts in it, it's kind of more towards breakfast. But the second you start putting chocolate on anything, I'm sorry. That's a dessert.
My girlfriend Amy, who's sitting quietly in the corner, we had our nephews over last night. We took them to CN Tower this morning, and she made chocolate chip pancakes.
Mm-hmm.
And I had some, and they're delicious. And I'm eating these, and I'm like, yeah, it's like cake. I'm having a treat. I'm having dessert for breakfast. Pancakes are dessert for breakfast. They're not a breakfast food.
That's also true of French toast.
Yeah.
French toast. Anything you put whipped cream on?
Mm-hmm.
Now, let me ask you this. Does syrup necessarily make it a sweet treat?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
So aren't pancakes just always breakfast cake?
They
even have cake in the name.
Yeah. It's you're right. And then the chocolate chip just puts it over the edge.
Right?
Yeah. Now, one serious question for
you. Oh, that wasn't serious?
No. That was a fun one. At one point, I had to, this morning, I had to discipline my younger nephew.
Ooh.
Because he had this little Nerf gun, and we told him last night, don't aim it at someone's face. In the morning, shot me in the cheek. And I grabbed him. And I was very, my tone was.
Did you get him by the shoulder?
Oh, yeah. I just grabbed him and said, you do not do that. Mm-hmm. We told you this yesterday. Look at me. And I repeated a couple times, you don't do it. And you know what I saw looking back in me? Mm. Fear.
Right.
And I'm curious, when you are disciplining Cece, now we're going somewhere really heavy. Does your stomach clench when you see even though you're teaching a lesson, when you see fear in the face of your small child?
The way I do it doesn't generate fear very often. It tends to generate self-recrimination, which isn't that much better an emotion in a lot of ways. Like you kind of pick your poison.
Yeah.
Because the unfortunate thing about punishing a kid is you're trying to, as much as you're trying to promote understanding, you know, a lot of times you're going through a difficult thing. You're almost teaching them like that adverse reaction. You know, I don't want to feel this way, so I'm not going to do this anymore. I don't know if that's necessarily the best way to do things, mm-hmm. but punishment by its very nature is supposed to create unpleasant
yes.
feelings for yeah. the person receiving the punishment.
Yeah.
Or else it wouldn't be punishment. Mm-hmm. I would say that fear, I'm a big believer that you don't instill fear in kids because I think that corrodes trust.
Yes.
But self-recrimination is tough too. Like I gave my daughter hell the other day for doing something and she deserved it. But she was so hard on herself afterwards, you know. You know, I shouldn't do this. I'm always getting this wrong. And then I thought, well, I can't run to her and say it was okay.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't okay.
Yeah.
But I do have to show her that I'm not angry. Mm-hmm. That, you know, here's the best thing I can say, Maddie. We distinguish between honest and non-honest mistakes in our home.
Yeah.
And we talk about this a lot. Like if you spill milk, honest mistake.
Honest mistake.
You know, and you should never feel bad about an honest mistake because you didn't mean to do it. And everybody does. Now, if you meant to do something and you figured it was bad for someone else, but good for you, that's not an honest mistake. That was just you being selfish
yeah.
or whatever. And that's not okay. I'm not a big believer in fear. But I also think that some of the more progressive techniques of parenting that suggest, well, just talk to your kid and explain it to them. I think that's good up to a point, but it's hard to explain to a seven-year-old the intricacies of modern ethics.
Yeah.
Right? Sometimes it's just don't do it.
Yeah. Oh,
just
yeah.
Just don't do it.
And like 10 seconds later, everything was fine. But there was that one moment, and I looked into his face, and I could tell, like, he realized, ooh, I did something wrong. And he's like, oh, God, I'm in trouble.
Right.
Like that was, you know, that was the look at his face. And it was fascinating. As someone who doesn't have to deal with that as an uncle, it was fascinating just to experience that. And then I wonder how parents, you know, how they process that.
Here's the God's honest truth about parenting. It tears you up inside because you deal with all of these emotions. Most of the things we deal with in life, you don't really care, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, I got a fight with a coworker. Like, sure, it upsets you to a point, but in the end, like...
You're moving on.
You're moving on, yeah. right? But your kid, like, geez, that's like, you love them more than anything.
Yeah.
So all these little things, man, they hit you in the gut. They hit you in the gut so hard. And you sensed that today, mm-hmm. right? Like, if you had said something at work and one of the interns maybe took you and thought you were pissed off at him.
Yeah.
You'd feel bad.
I'd feel bad, yeah, of course.
And you'd probably go to them and say, look, that probably came across wrong yeah. or whatever, right?
Whatever, like onwards and upwards.
Right. But at the same time, you wouldn't lose sleep over it.
Probably. 2 minutes later, I'm thinking about lunch.
Right. But a kid, you think about that all day, and yeah. all night, and the next day, too. It's hard, man. It's hard.
It is, yeah.
So I guess this is to say that you are not any closer to wanting to be a parent.
Not any further away either. I had a blast with them the last yesterday and today. It was a really good time.
Intellectual understanding has its limits, but emotional understanding and empathy, I think that is really the key where you want to anchor this stuff.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep, that's fair.
They're really emotionally sophisticated.
Yep. You mentioned honest mistake versus like spilling of milk.
Uh-huh.
Can I tell another quick story?
Of course.
It involves Amy. So a couple nights ago, I had to go to bed because I was doing the morning show. And, you know, I had a glass of wine with Amy and her twin sister. And I'm like, okay, hey, you guys obviously go grab a bottle or whatever, have a drink. I'll see you guys tomorrow. So I go up to bed. Get up the next morning. And remember, this is 4:45 in the morning. 4:45, your level of rage can be a lot higher. Lying on the couch, sleeping, is Amy. So that's to my right. To my left, I see a couple bottles of wine. Not a problem at all. Amy and her sister stayed up for a bunch of hours. They basically had a bottle and a half of wine, watched a bunch of movies. Great. First bottle I see. Oh, yeah, that makes sense. You know, $15 bottle of wine. Great. The next bottle of wine was about a little over $200 bottle. Now, the mistake was an honest one because she recognized the label. And we've had this wine before, but they have different levels. They've got a entry-level $16 bottle of wine. Delicious. She thought it was that. It wasn't. So there I am at 4:45 in the morning, seeing her sleeping, just luxuriating and sleeping on the couch, and I'm holding this bottle of wine. And this bottle of wine was like the Orca, and I was Jaws. I had been, you know, surrounding this bottle of wine, looking at it going, I'm going to get to you soon there, buddy boy. And there was just about a glass worth left. And man, for a moment, filled with rage.
So what was it at the heart of the rage? Was it that you really wanted it and now it was gone?
That's part. Also, they never got to enjoy it. They didn't realize. You did not realize. No, they enjoyed the wine. They didn't realize just what they had opened.
Because they were a little drunk already. And so the second nice bottle
buzz.
Of wine.
Good buzz. Yeah, yeah.
But something like that is for sipping. That's a good sipping wine.
And to acknowledge, we are drinking this 2009 Gugel Cote Roti.
Don't describe it, because it just, it's the worst.
I know. That makes me the worst. So that was, and again, that was an honest mistake, but one that still caused a moment of rage.
Right.
Yeah.
The, it's always, like, because your brain tells you, like, what are you going to say? Just things happen, right? But that stupid lizard brain in the back of your head that's like a selfish whining child is like, but me wanted that.
Oh, yeah. That was me in the elevator. You know, at now 4:58, that was the lizard brain inside of me. Absolutely.
All right. So let me share this with you. Man, we're going way off sports today, but what the hell? So I have this ongoing thing with Sandra. Like, you know, we don't really divide up the chores. One person does one versus someone else does the other. It's a potpourri.
Yeah.
Whoever's around, you know, all hands on deck. But she constantly doesn't separate the stuff that can shrink in the washing machine from the stuff. So stuff is constantly coming out shrunk, and specifically from the dryer.
Yep. Oh yeah. So I'll always have, from the dryer.
Right. So I'll have t-shirts all the time that, you know, when I woke up that morning, they fit. When I went to bed that night, they no longer fit. And one of my favorite shirts, and this happens all the time, one of my favorite shirts got shrunk, and I can't say anything.
Yeah.
Because like nobody's like trying to do anything.
Like
bad.
She's like, I hate Bob. I'm going to shrink his t-shirt.
It might be like that, but I don't think it is.
I hope it's not.
But it exactly the same kind of thing where you say, look, like this person is like busy and just trying to get stuff done. And she does so much over the course of a day. It's insane. I don't know anybody who does more than she does, really. And so what am I going to do? Cry about a t-shirt? It was my favorite one, man. It's my favorite t-shirt.
Yeah.
And I have so little in this life.
Yeah, I'd say I'm 80% or so success rate with the dividing, because a lot of Amy's stuff can't go in the dryer. I think I'm at 80, 85%. Every now and then something slips through.
So here was my thing.
Yeah.
I didn't say anything about it.
Yep.
That was how I decided to handle it, because in the end, it sounds like you're shaming the person. Mm-hmm. And I had no intention to shame her, because it was an honest mistake.
Yeah.
And you know, I could diet. Maybe it's just the impetus to diet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm making vegetable broth at home.
Yep.
I'm making it good. You know, like maybe this is the universe. Maybe that wasn't even Sandra. Maybe that was the universe saying, hey, Bob, you sure tucked the groceries away during the Christmas break. Well, why don't you ease off a little bit?
You go self-reflection. I tweeted that dilemma on my account. And then I tweeted the Ask Amy relationship counselor on for the Toronto Sun. And she's got like 20,000 followers. She wrote back and said, it's time to break up. Tough but fair.
All right. Well, I want to do dot, 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 just because my computer is about to run out of
steam. Okay, yeah, yeah. Go, go, go.
And then we'll talk some top NFL five. Football.
Oh, top five NHL acts.
Okay, all right.
Yeah.
So here's my dot, 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 where I read a bunch of random thoughts
in
a Steve Simmons-esque style. After Ellen Pompeo's Hollywood Reporter interview, my theory that great athletes will eventually own pieces of the team they play for seems even more likely to me. The Department of Non-Bragworthy Injuries. I hurt my thumb this week making naan. It's hard to feel tough when heating bread puts you on the shelf. And finally, I know they suck every year at this time, but the Cavs issues just might be finally catching up to them. Dot, dot, dot.
Let's hear the naan story.
Yeah,
first.
Okay. So, I'm heating up naan, and it's like pita, but it's a little airier.
Mm-hmm.
And because it's airy, and I didn't think this through, I don't make a lot of naan at home. I wanted to try it out. So I just got some olive oil, heated up the pan, put in a little salt, put in the naan. But because it's airy, the pockets of air really heat up, and they bubble up.
Yeah.
So I had to flip it, and my finger poked one of the holes.
Yeah.
Right? Or it wasn't a hole. It was a bubble. It became a hole, and steam escaped and torched my thumb.
Ooh.
At which point I yelled an expletive, went immediately to the sink, shoved it under the cold water, realized this isn't going to work, got the ice cube, put the ice cube on my thumb, and for 2 days, and you can still see the remnants of it there, Maddie, remnants of it there, the blister. So, and then I thought afterwards, actually, oddly enough, I thought of you, and I thought, this is like one of those, I can't be too proud of this injuries.
Yeah.
I hurt myself warming bread.
Warming bread, yeah, when you just break it down like that.
Hey, Bob, what's the Band-Aid for? Well, you know, the soldering gun was acting up. And
yeah, exactly. You know, I thought I'd pulled the plug on the power drill. Well, lesson learned, yeah. Yeah, that is a tough one. You just do the sentence. I injured myself warming bread. That's nowhere near on the bio of John Wayne.
Yeah. They say that the ladies love scars.
Yeah.
I'm not so sure they'd love this one.
Yeah, it depends what the scar is. Okay, now the Cleveland one is one that's talked about a lot. I want to hear about the Pompeii article.
Oh, okay. Okay, so Ellen Pompeo is the star. She plays Meredith Grey on Grey's Anatomy. That show's been on like 15 years now, and she just renegotiated her contract, and she's the highest paid woman in TV now.
Yep.
She makes just under $600,000 an episode, which sounds like an amazing amount until you consider it's a multi-billion dollar franchise for ABC. And she came out, and she was very forthright, you know. In years past, I might not have asked for as much as I was worth, but basically screw it. She's like, they could offer me to direct a little bit more, but that just takes me away from my kids. You know. And she said, look, I'm 48 and I'm not Julia Roberts. So when they shuffle me out of the deck, I'm going to be pretty gone in Who's Kidding Who.
Yeah.
And she was peppering it with F words. And what I thought about was, as we move further and further away from talent feeling like they have to apologize for what they're worth, mm-hmm. and for years that was the case.
Yeah.
In many fields. And I guess probably because women made less than men and we're looking at that more and more. Like, we're just, the whole idea of what you get paid is being revisited. God, a guy like the next LeBron James, whoever that's going to be, like, you know, someone who's worth like many billion to the league. How are you going to be able to pay them a salary? Eventually, someone's going to turn around and say, I am worth more than the freaking team I play for.
It's, well, I want to see the players become owners. But the thing is, it always makes it seem easy, but $1 billion is a lot of money. You know, like Derek Jeter had to beg and plead, and he needed so much money just to get a small percentage of the Marlins. You know, let's not forget that $1 billion, that takes a lot of work and a lot of generations to get
there. A lot of entertainers are getting closer and closer to that number, though. You mm-hmm. look at Diddy, you look at Jay-Z. These guys are knocking
but they do
on
for booze. A lot of that is actually booze. Like, yeah, you know what, no, George absolutely. Clooney's that rich? Because he's got tequila.
He's got,
why is Diddy? Diddy's got like vodka. Like,
100%.
It's funny.
But they are all learning how to be businesses.
Yeah.
And eventually, and I'm not talking in 5 years, but I'm saying 20, 25 years down the line, God, the marketing machine just gets better and better every generation.
Yep.
It just gets easier and easier to sell talent.
Yep.
Sell celebrity. So can't you see a time when a LeBron James is worth more than most of the teams in the league?
Basketball is the one where you can make that case, and it is the LeBron. It's the Halley's Comet. If there is a version of LeBron that has that much impact on everything in the league, how much we talk about the league, then yes. But it's going to be basketball only, and it's going to be a LeBron level of everything. Yes, I can see that.
So we'll see.
Yeah.
All it made me think of, and the reason it was a dot, 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 is I read that.
Yeah.
And the first thing that came to mind was beyond, you know, good for you for saying, you know, what everybody thinks but never says.
Yeah.
You know, just the world is evolving and people are asking for more and more and their leverage is getting higher and higher.
Yep. The NHL, Twitter,
mm-hmm.
everyone not happy with Kid Rock. And I get it. No one likes seeing anyone associated with the Confederate flag. Having your photo with Donald Trump, in a lot of circles, it's not exactly going to make you the most popular fella on the planet.
Well, and his vision is, he's spoken vocally, he's against transgender rights. And,
mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
You know, so it's not as simple as just, he's not just a Trump supporter that people don't like. He's been pretty vocal about some stuff that's not.
Yes. The other side is the NAACP has honored him with one of their highest awards, and he has given millions of dollars to Michigan, to Detroit. And this is not me defending him. This is me just throwing out that if you're going to judge an individual, you must judge the sum of their actions, not just the really crappy parts that we hate.
I question how much he really believes any of this stuff, kind of like Donald Trump. I think he just knows he's got a base and he's making his money there.
Yeah. So anyway, I came up with, I don't know if you've got your own top five. If not,
I just got a couple suggestions.
Okay. Here's my, and this is our top five acts to perform at the NHL All-Star Game. here are my apology ones. Two of them. One, Taggart and Torrance. They would be great. They would be awesome. I would love to see Taggart and Torrance perform at the halftime. So them and also Bare Naked Ladies, who are going to be inducted in the Canadian Music Hall of Fame on March 25th. Those are my two just barely missed making it for my top five NHL acts.
All right. Good, two good ones so far.
The first one, where is the All-Star game? It's in Florida. And I know that Gloria Estefan is from Cuba, but she has a very sort of Miami feel. But I don't just want her. I also want Ariana Grande, someone younger from Florida. And, of course, Pitbull. I don't know what he does, but he makes noises and everyone seems to be happy. So a 1-2-3 of Gloria, because the rhythm's going to get you, Ariana Grande and Pitbull, that trio, number five of my top, should perform for the halftime.
Do you ever watch Fox on New Year's and they have Pitbull's New Year's special?
Yes.
It's the best.
It's the best.
It is the best. Yeah. It is like 93% shout outs.
Yeah. And just pointing. What's he pointing to? I don't know. But I'm moving my hips. Number four, we've never had a magic act. Penn and Teller. They're really smart, great social commentary. And also, I love a magic act. I never want to know how it works. And even when they describe how it does work, it's still interesting. So number four, Penn and Teller.
Very good. Once again, a great call.
Number three, Gary Bettman dunk tank. We go to center ice. There's Gary Bettman in a clown outfit. But how are you going to get him to dunk into the cold water? Well, there's a little target. But to engage it, a puck needs to hit this at over 90 miles an hour. So who do we have there? We've got Zdeno Chara, Shea Weber, and Al MacInnis all standing there taking shots to see if they can dunk Gary Bettman.
That's borderline genius.
Thank you. At number two, Bruno Mars. Because it's Bruno Mars.
Because Bruno Mars.
He's awesome.
You don't need to explain.
Number one, this one might be controversial.
Okay.
I would love this. This is total Canadiana for me. I'd like the rest of the men, and again, everyone has to agree to it, including Gord Downie's estate. Like, everyone has to be on board. And if the slight person has a slight issue with it, it's canceled. The rest of the members of the Tragically Hip, and they invite Wynn Butler, the lead singer from Arcade Fire, and they do all the top Tragically Hip songs. That would be my number one.
Right. I'm glad you didn't say hologram, Gord Downie.
Good God, no.
No, but some people like holograms. But I'm just saying I'm glad you didn't say that. I love that list, Maddie. It's a great list. Maybe your best list. Pat yourself on the back, Johnny K9.
I would if I was that flexible.
Yeah, fair enough. It isn't easy to get back there these days. I got a couple to add to it.
Yeah.
One is Super Dogs, just because I've never seen an event where Super Dogs doesn't...
You know what's hilarious? Mm. I actually had that. I was thinking about it. I actually Googled earlier... dog shows that have performed at sporting events. I love watching dogs, like even at the Cranberry Festival in Bala. Watching dogs catch frisbees is always great.
At the Royal Winter Fair every year, we love the... You got to get there early to see the Super Dogs, too.
Oh, yeah.
Because there is a lineup. The other one, and I think as an SNL fan, you'll appreciate this. Wouldn't it be hip of the NHL... after Chance the Rapper's sketch on Saturday Night Live, where he plays the guy who doesn't know hockey,
yes.
to have Chance the Rapper perform at the All-Star break?
No, Bob. Not only is he performing, he is doing the play-by-play. He's the third man in the booth for all of it. I would love to see him performing, but I want Chance the Rapper recreating the role. I want him in between benches of Pierre Maguire, and I want Pierre and Chance the Rapper. Couldn't you imagine that? Pierre's mentioning some guys from Albertville, and Chance the Rapper's like, I don't know where that is. I remember Albert Bell. He was a good player.
I thought you would enjoy that
one. I love that one.
Yeah.
That is good.
The NHL's pretty conservative.
Yeah.
On the best of days. I don't know if they're going to goof around with their sponsors. Sponsors love this event. Kids love this event.
Yes. I'm never the guy that poo-poos the
event. Have you been to a live All-Star game in any sport?
Not for actual event. I mean, I was... the peripheral for when the NBA was here a couple of years ago.
Right. And even that's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
You know, I haven't gone to a bunch of All-Star games in different sports. They're all fun. But not on TV. On TV, it's kind of a drag.
You're right. It's sponsors, children, and just for the whatever city, you know, they benefit. Everyone else watching on home, you just sit there and send snarky tweets about how bad it is.
Although I do think that this year's NBA All-Star game, the fact they can pick their own squads... I'm pretty excited about that. I don't really care about how they play together.
Yeah.
I just like the idea of picking them. And the NHL had the draft back in the day. Remember?
Yeah, who was last?
Phil Kessel was Mr. Irrelevant. But that was fun, though.
It was fun.
I don't know why they stopped doing that kind of stuff.
Maybe it hurt people's feelings.
Oh, boo-hoo. Yeah.
It's so funny. It's the toughest game. We demand players do things that could cause dementia, but heaven forbid they have to pick who they want to play with. That's a bridge too far for them. But slamming someone's head against the glass, oh, that's a boarding penalty. Hey, here's a couple minutes and come back on the ice.
That's a good point, Matt. It is a matter of perspective. So how long do we have? We should probably talk a little football before we get into the
We got 3 minutes.
3 minutes?
Yeah, we got like 3 minutes.
God, we just went on and on and on about a lot of stuff today.
We had some heavy stuff. The Estrada, the parenting stuff,
No, I didn't say it was light.
Talk
and a lot of Leafs talk.
A lot of Leafs
talk. All right, so Jags. Are we feeling it? Hot Jags talk?
Rawr.
Tom Brady apparently has hurt his right hand.
Yeah, that's a thing.
Yeah, we'll see. If it was really hurt, would we know?
No.
Yeah, I didn't think so.
No, he could be decapitated. We would know. Like, there could be footage of his head, you know, rolling on the UMass Pike onto a pike, and we would have no idea. Real quick for me, the Jags can win if Miles Jack and the other linebackers can contain Gronkowski, and if the front four can apply consistent pressure on Brady. If they do that, they have a chance. Otherwise, nope.
I will say, as much as I want the Jags to win, and I do want them to win, if it's them and really either of those teams from the NFC, it's going to be pretty hard to care about this Super Bowl.
I cannot. Listen, we are hot Jags talk. I don't want Jacksonville in the Super Bowl. The Super Bowl still needs stakes. And having the Jags and whomever, it feels like week 12, a 1 o'clock game you weren't going to watch anyway. I need stakes. As we say all the time, I want George Mason in the Sweet 16. I want North Carolina and Kansas in the title game.
Does that mean we're rooting for New England?
Make the Super Bowl great again? It's so tough, but yeah, big picture, I guess I am.
No, I got to go with the Jags. You got to dance with the person you know who brought you. Come on. We're hot Jags talk.
We are
Maddie.
Hot Jags talk. I know. It's just the Super. I'll be more focused.
Don't you want to see Jalen Ramsey?
I want to see Jalen Ramsey on the.
Marcel Darius.
TJ Yeldon with a 3-yard run. Yeah, no, I can't. I love the idea of it, but I can't, Bob. I'm going to be honest.
Well, whatever happens, Blake Bortles will be happy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Blake Bortles has won. He's already won, no matter what. And in the other game, meh.
Yeah.
I'd like to say more. I'm rooting for Minnesota. I think Minnesota is a more impressive team just because of the Carson Wentz injury. So I'll be rooting for Minnesota because the Super Bowl's in Minnesota. It'd be interesting to see a team playing in its home arena.
If Philadelphia wins, the story is going to be, so how can they win it all without being interesting?
Yeah.
Oof. Yeah. So there's that. I guess we'll see you on Monday.
We will, Bob. Absolutely. Right. I will see you on Monday. Fun podcast. Enjoy the weekend, sir.
You too. Chick-chicka.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.